The Larry Hardesty Show on 98.7 ESPN.
Here's a man that's been on the radio more than I've been over the past couple of days. He is Rich Cimini, who does a great job covering the Jets for us for ESPN.com. Rich, Larry Hardesty on a Sunday. How are you, my friend?
All right, Larry. I don't know about that, but
you've been on a lot.
There's a lot to talk about with the Jets, you know?
No question.
I mean, this is draft season. It's like
absolutely
the Jet fan Super Bowl.
I was hesitant to see if you were available today because I thought you might need a blow. Because, I mean, the weekend draft, Rich, you know, even though they've split it up over 3 days, it's still a grind, especially that Saturday, that 4-7 on Saturday. That's a rough go.
Yeah, yes. It was actually kind of quiet on Thursday and Friday, only two picks. And then yesterday, it all hit at once. It was probably one of the more hectic draft days that I've covered, simply because, you know, you had the John Franklin Myers trade, you had the quarterback, which always becomes a separate story. You know, they draft Jordan Travis out of Florida State, and then they had the Mr. Irrelevant, you know, which is always a story. So yesterday was a pretty hectic day for sure.
Rich, based on what the Jets did in the draft, did Joe Douglas accomplish what he wanted to going in?
Yeah, I mean, I think they wanted to try to continue to address the offense. I mean, we saw in free agency, I think five out of their six significant acquisitions were on the offensive side of the ball, mainly on the offensive line. And I think they went into the draft with the same mentality, trying to continue to improve the offense, which has just been dreadful for the longest time, you know, just for years, not just this past year, but going back for probably 12, 13 years, it's just been at the bottom of the league. And so they did that with the first five picks were offensive players. And Joe Douglas said that was a coincidence. That was just the way the board fell, you know, maybe a little bit, but we knew that going in, they were going to take a pass catcher and an offensive tackle. We just didn't know the order. And so they end up going with the offensive tackle first, Olufoshanu, and then coming back at the top of the third round and getting Malachi Corley out of Western Kentucky. So those were two needs that I thought they hit right out of the box. And I think Joe Douglas accomplished what he wanted here. And with seven picks, they also picked up a 2025 third rounder from Detroit. So they're already a little bit ahead of the game for next year. So I thought it was a pretty productive draft.
Rich, Vashanu has gotten a lot of positive press, what he's been able to do with Penn State. I mean, the fact that he hasn't allowed a sack and those numbers are just, I mean, he should be starting for the Jets right now just based on that. But clearly, this is a situation where, Rich, they have some depth there with a young player and somebody they can build around when you've got some injury concerns on that line from some veteran players that you picked up in free agency.
Yeah, that stat on the sacks is a little subjective. I mean, our ESPN website has it at one sack. Some say zero. Either way, it's really good. You know, he had a good career at Penn State. I think the only game where he struggled, and he admitted this when we interviewed him, was the Ohio State game last year. And I went back and I watched the tape of that. And he did have a handful of plays, you know, that didn't go his way. Easily could have been a couple of sacks there. But, you know, he's a really good player. I mean, it's good value. They got him at 11. They traded down one spot. They got extracted a couple of picks out of a very desperate Minnesota team that didn't want to take a chance on losing J.J. McCarthy. So the Jets got the guy they were going to take at 10. They got him at 11. And ordinarily, it's a weird situation, Larry, because ordinarily a team picking that high, you draft a guy 11th, he's going to start for you right away. And with the Jets, that is not the plan. You know, they have five starters on the offensive line, but we do know that two of those starters are 33 years old, Tyron Smith and Morgan Moses. And in the case of Smith, the guy hasn't had a full season since 2015 because of injuries. So I do believe that Olufoshanu will end up playing a bunch this year. Might not be week one, but I do think he'll get into the lineup. Also wouldn't rule out the possibility of him. Maybe they try him at another position, maybe left guard. He's never played there before, but that would be a quicker path to the starting lineup. And then, so what they have is short-term insurance and then they have their heir apparent at left tackle for 2025.
Rich, Malachi Corley, how does he shape up? Is he a guy that is going to move into the starting rotation at receiver? Where do you see him long-term and short-term with the Jets offensively?
Yeah, I think, Larry, he'll be the guy out of this draft class that contributes the quickest. He's got the easiest path to playing time, of course, at receiver. Even if you're not starting, you could still play a lot. He's a slot guy. He played primarily in the slot at Western Kentucky. I talked to some scouts about him, you know, some non-Jet scouts, and they said he needs to work on his route running. He's not a polished receiver right now, but he can learn that. What he can do right now is make plays when he gets the ball in his hands. His yards after catch numbers the last couple of years were just off the charts. And just I think he was a first or second, you know, in college football and yards after the catch. It's an area where the Jets were not good last year. The Jets receivers were second to last in the league in yards after catch. So here's a guy, if you throw him the ball on a bubble screen or you get it to him on a jet sweep, he's going to make guys miss. He's going to break tackles. He's a strong guy, an angry runner, just really can make plays with the ball in his hands. And so I think you'll see him in the slot right away, you know, with Garrett Wilson and Mike Williams on the outside. And I think he can be a help to their offense. So that's why I'm predicting that he'll probably have the earliest impact.
Rich, do you see them doing anything else at the receiver situation? Because obviously we've heard a lot about them trying, you know, rumors of them trying to move up and in the draft to get, you know, to deepen their offense at the receiver position. Do you think, you know, because afterwards, as you well know, there'll be a bunch of folks who are not drafted that'll be coming in that you'll be looking at. Is this wide receiving core pretty much set right now the way it is?
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's set because, I mean, I think there's always room to improve it. Yeah, it's an interesting mix there. I mean, of course, you have Garrett Wilson. We know he's their wide receiver one. And I do think Corley will be in the rotation as the third or fourth guy. Mike Williams, you know, they expect him to be ready for the start of the season, but he's probably not going to be ready for training camp or the preseason. So he's a little bit of a question mark. You know, how's he going to be coming off the ACL surgery? I mean, if he can pull a Breece Hall, then he's going to have a great year, you know. But Breece Hall is a lot younger. You recover quicker when you're younger, as we know, Larry.
And oh yeah.
Breece Hall made a fantastic recovery last year and rushed for basically 1,000 yards. And so I do think there could be room for another veteran in that room. You know, Alan Lazard has been an enigma. I mean, they gave him a ton of money to come in. $22 million guaranteed. We know he had a bad year, ended up in the doghouse, still on the roster. Can't trade him because of the salary. So I'm curious to see what their plans are for him. But I could see them bringing in another middle-of-the-road type veteran, maybe not immediately, but maybe later on in training camp, depending on how things shake out with Williams and Lazard.
Rich Simini is my guest. Rich, before we talk about the quarterback, let's skip. We'll come back to him. Two running backs drafted by the Jets. Do you think this is A, depth, B, a challenge for Abanaconda, or C, all the above?
All of the above, Larry. You know, they have four running backs now with Hall and Abanaconda, and they drafted Braylon Allen from Wisconsin. He had a really productive career at Wisconsin, 3,900 rushing yards. He's only 20 years old. He's 20 years old. He won't be 21 till next January. He was the youngest player in the draft, 235 pounds. He was the heaviest running back at the combine, so he gives them a different dimension. Isaiah Davis from South Dakota State is I thought that was a puzzling pick to me. I didn't think they needed to draft another running back, so that's the one pick that I look at and I scratch my head a little bit. I guess they felt the value was too good to pass up because I really didn't think they needed to draft another running back. So they got four guys now who are all 23 and under. I mean, it's got to be the youngest running back room in the league. Maybe they learned a lesson last year. You know, they gave Dalvin Cook a ton of money. He's 28 years old. looked like he was washed up, and they didn't get much out of him at all. So this year they're going with the young legs, and they got a pretty, you know, young stable of running backs.
Now, Rich, this is going to be an unfair question, so I'm putting it out there right off the bat. When you look at Jordan, you look at Jordan Travis, and you know, when you read people saying he's a developmental, he's a guy that he's a project. Rich, the Jets have not really been great at developing quarterbacks. I mean, what can we expect that they're going to do differently with this young man that they haven't been able to do with Sam Darnold, with Zach Wilson, and I guess you and I could go list a bunch of quarterbacks on and on and on.
It's a great question. And, you know, Joe Douglas said recently that they want to create a quarterback factory. Yeah, I think they're probably the furthest thing from a factory right now because, you know, the reasons you just mentioned. Look, Jordan Travis is a different pick from a Darnold or a Zach Wilson. It's really apples and oranges because those guys were pressed into action right away with huge expectations. Here's a guy with no expectations. He's going to carry the clipboard. He's going to be the third guy. The first thing they've got to do is get him healthy. You know, we all saw that gruesome ankle injury he had last November against North Alabama, required surgery. You know, he's still not 100%. The Jets were kind of vague yesterday when we asked him about when he'd be ready. Joe Douglas said we feel good about getting him back at some point during the year. So he may not even be ready for training camp. So that's the first thing, get him healthy. Secondly, just let him learn. I mean, he's going to have Aaron Rodgers and Tyrod Taylor to learn from. That's like 32 years of NFL experience, I believe. So for him, it's just to be a sponge. You know, there's no pressure on him. And just whatever they get at him this year is a plus. You know, get him a bunch of reps maybe in the preseason if he's ready. And just let him learn. And so that'll be the different approach. Is he going to be the heir apparent to Rodgers? Who knows? I mean, he's a fifth round. You don't know. He certainly can move well. He's a playmaker. When things break down, he can make those plays outside the pocket. He has that flair. He doesn't have the strongest arm. He doesn't have the biggest build. He's had some shoulder injuries also in his career. He's only 6'1". But he improved his accuracy from year to year, so he seems to be a guy who is growing into the position. And so the Jets are just going to give him a chance to learn. You know, I know he impressed them a lot in the pre-draft interviews, really came on strong with in terms of leadership ability. So who knows? I mean, but there's no expectations, and that's the difference between him and a guy like Sam or Zach Wilson.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I'm just, you know, Rich, when you look at they just have not been able to you know, develop quarterbacks. I mean, and here's the thing. It's not one regime. It's been a bunch of regimes that have just not been able to get their quarterbacks to take that next step, whether they were good in college or okay in college or great in college. They just haven't been able to get that done. I mean, Rich, you go back to
Chad Pennington.
Yeah, like, it's just the best quarterback.
Yeah. And what happened with Chad? You know, they didn't rush him. You know, he had 2 years to sit on the bench and learn. And by the time he got in, which was in his third year, and when he replaced Testaverde, you know, he was ready to roll. You know, he hit the ground running. But the Jets had an unusual situation that year. They had four number one picks in 2000, so they could afford to take a quarterback. They had the luxury of putting him on the bench, and they had a real good starter, Vinny Testaverde, at the time. So they had a nice pipeline set up, and I think Joe Douglas is trying to set up something similar here with Jordan Travis. Now, they tried that a couple of years ago with James Morgan. They drafted him in the fourth round, and it was a wasted draft pick. He just didn't have it. He didn't have NFL ability, bounced around the league a little bit, and I believe he's out of the league right now. So, you know, as Parcells would say, they don't sell insurance for this kind of stuff. So you just never know. You just take a chance, and hopefully you can hit.
Rich Amini is my guest. Rich, John Franklin Myers, I understand, you know, cap reasons and money. I still was a little surprised.
Two words, Larry. Salary dump. That's what it was. I mean, it wasn't only cap, it was cash. Mm-hmm. I mean, $13 million in salary this year, they just did not want to pay that after committing $15 million to Hassan Reddick. I know that the day they traded for Reddick, you know, John told some people, you know, some of friends, that he knew he was a goner. That was about 4 weeks ago. So I'm not surprised that he's gone. I thought they were going to go the pay cut route and maybe try to get him to stay that way. But I think his camp was pretty adamant about not taking a pay cut with the Jets. And so he ended up taking a pay cut to go to Denver. It's 2 years, $15 million. $10 million guaranteed. This year with the Jets, he would have made $13 million. So it is a little bit of a pay cut. But I think he was willing to take that to go elsewhere and get more playing time. Had he stayed with the Jets, it would have been a pay cut and less playing time. So I was a little surprised that it happened when it did. But I'm not surprised that he's gone. Even John, like I said, he was telling people as far back as a month ago that he thought he was a goner. And I don't really like the trade, to be quite honest with you. I like what Joe Douglas has done this offseason for the most part. I just thought the defensive line is probably weaker now than it was last year. Not re-signing Bryce Huff, losing a guy like JFM, who, granted, he didn't use sack numbers last year, but he played every game. He played hurt. He did a lot of the dirty work. He set the edge for their run defense. The run defense had some hiccups last year as it was. Now you're taking out a 290-pound defensive end and replacing him with a 240-pound defensive end and Hassan Reddick. So I wonder about their run defense. They're going to rely more on Michael Clemens to play that JFM role. I'm not so sure. I think it's a drop-off, and I question their strategy on the defensive line this offseason.
That's an interesting point, Rich, because let's face it, that's the Jets' identity. Their identity is their defense. And this was a team that got run on. And we talked about it a lot last season. And now you have the possibility of them getting run on some more. And, you know, it's going to put a lot of pressure on Quinnen Williams and that secondary, because you're going to end up being in second and third and short situations, Rich. And you don't get to, defense doesn't get to dictate in second and third and short.
Yeah, I don't think their run defense was as bad as people thought last year. I think a lot of it was because they were behind in games where teams were running a lot or rushing attempts. If you look at, you know, like the yards per carry and some of the analytics we have, the run defense was not nearly as bad as some people were making it out to be. However, you make a good point that it's not the same cast of characters. And, you know, Reddick is a really good player. You know, he's a better pass rusher than Bryce Huff because, I mean, Reddick's one of the most prolific pass rushers in the league, but he's only 240 pounds. And then at defensive tackle, they lost Quentin Jefferson, who I thought did a really good job for the Jets last year. They replaced him with Javon Kinlaw, who probably has more ability, like more natural talent than Jefferson, but he's been a guy who's been hurt a lot in his career. So you got to keep him healthy. It's just, you know, they're still a deep, talented defensive line. They go eight deep, but I just think you lose a good rusher in Huff. You lose a guy, a blue-collar guy like a JFM who did a lot of the things that don't go into the stat sheet. So that's why I think it's still a good defensive line. Mm-hmm. It's not like they've fallen off the cliff. It's still a good defensive line. However, I don't know if they'll be as good as last year.
Rich, is it me or is it just every time, it seems like every time you and I speak and we talk about the player that the Jets have, there's a caveat at the end that says has injury issues. With the drafting.
Well, they signed a bunch of, I mean, look at their offensive line last year. I mean, they probably set a record for most injuries in one season for an offensive line. It was just a constant game of musical chairs. Tyron Smith is a fan. He's a great left tackle. He's probably going to be in the Hall of Fame someday, but, you know, he's missed an average of 9 games a year for the last 4 years. So there's an injury issue there. You know, Mike Williams, you know, he's had some issues in his career. He's coming off the ACL. So there's another injury issue situation. So, yeah, I mean, there's some risk involved, but that's where they were able to sign a Tyron Williams, you know, Mike Williams, a Tyron Smith and Mike Williams. They were well-known, big-name players who've had really good careers, but they were available for relatively modest prices because of those injuries. So that's why their market was depressed in free agency. So the Jets are taking some chances there on these guys. But, you know, they're hoping it's win now, baby, right?
Yeah.
Joe Douglas, Robert Saleh, the honeymoon's long been over, and they have to win now. And I think they've taken some chances on some of these older veterans, and that's why they drafted a guy like Olu Fashanu, because if something happens to Tyron Smith, they could put a first-round pick in there at left tackle.
So, Rich, what are some of the things you've got cooking for the flight deck over the next couple of days?
Yeah, well, we'll do a draft recap coming up this week, and there's a lot to talk about with we didn't even talk about the Zach Wilson trade. I mean, that happened, less than a week ago, and, of course, he'll get a chance to reboot his career in Denver. And, that was a trade that we all saw coming. I'm sure we talked about it in past conversations. But, the Jets, there's a lot going on. They have a rookie minicamp starting on Friday, and then we get into the OTAs, and we'll get a good look at Aaron Rodgers back on the field, you know, to some extent. I don't know if he'll be full go, but everything seems to be positive in terms of his rehab with the Achilles. And so there's a lot to talk about on flight deck this week.
Yeah, Rich is going to be a busy man on that flight deck. Mr. Irrelevant, they choose, and so there's a lot of stuff going on. And, Rich, always thanks for a couple of minutes, my friend. We'll talk soon.
All right, Larry, thanks for having me. Take care.
My pleasure. We'll talk again. Rich Cimini. When we return, we'll get your thoughts on what Rich had to say. 1-800-919-3776 and on X, formerly Twitter, at Hardesty ESPN on 98.7 ESPN New York.
The Larry Hardesty Show on 98.7 ESPN.
Who knows more about covering the Jets than he does? He's the... From a longevity standpoint, he's the longest guy, longest reporter covering that team. Had the pleasure of covering the team alongside him for a number of years on the beat with the Jets. And, I value his thought process and his information. And, of course, his sources are impeccable. So when he says that there is concern, there is a drop-off from the Jets, not a major drop-off, but a drop-off nevertheless, it raises my eyebrow, okay? This is what this team is known for. This team's identity is their defense. And even though they may not have had maybe the running stats of how many yards they gave up against the run may not be what we thought it was, but I will tell you this, whether teams were ahead or whatever the reason was, they did not do a good job at stopping the run. What the scenario was, from my memory and games I remember watching and seeing, they did a horrible job in trying to stop the run consistently, especially late in games, especially in the fourth quarter where you needed to get the ball back and teams were running the football. They couldn't get off the field. And so now if you're telling me that it takes a step back and you had trouble getting off the field again against the run, then... if I'm a Jet fan, I'm not excited. That's not what I want to hear. Okay? Now, hopefully, they'll be faster, and maybe they'll do a better job at, you know, guys running to the outside with, you know, maybe they'll be able to stretch the field a little bit and do a better job going sideline to sideline. But, you know, when your identity is your defense, as this team is, and I don't want to hear, well, you know, we got Aaron Rodgers and we'll be able to put up more points. I don't know what Aaron Rodgers is going to be. I mean, I would think from an ego standpoint, from the fact that he was trying to come back last season, I give him credit. I expect that he is mentally ready to go. And he was ready to go to try to come back last season. I get it. I don't doubt that. But I still don't know from a production standpoint what I'm going to get from Aaron Rodgers. I don't know. I just don't. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how this team performs. Okay, it is. There's still a lot of pressure on this team. Jobs are at stake. And there's nothing funny about that. jobs are at stake here. More so than at any time. Larry, everybody's jobs at stake. Yeah, I get it. But when you know that one guy's, these are the contracts, and they're in that spot where you have to make a decision whether you're bringing people back or not, and the team has underachieved, has not made the playoffs. I know it's not just this regime, but the team has not made the postseason in 13 years. You better believe jobs are at stake. And I just get, I remember Mike Westhoff saying, I don't like to draft guys who were hurt in college because they'll be hurt in the pros. And as I said to Samina, I just keep hearing every time, guys hurt, this guy was hurt, this guy was hurt. And, you know, Jets are taking the chance. Now, it doesn't mean that everybody's not injury prone, but it just causes me to raise my eyebrows. 1-800-919-3776. Hey, Ira, you're next on 98.7.
Hey, what's happening, Larry? And always good to hear Rich. And I respectfully have to disagree with him about Frank Myers before we get to the draft.
Mm-hmm.
Now, listen, I honestly, nice player. I think he's overrated. I think they overpaid for him. And I don't think they're going to take as much as a hit as Rich says. But, you know, I respect his opinion. We'll see how it plays out. For the draft, you know, I look at it, and let's face it, you and I don't know, and Douglas and Sala don't know. You know, all these guys are God-gifted athletes. That's why they're drafted to go to the NFL. It's what coaching staff, what team, and how much heart, and how much can you take it to the next level. That's really what it's all about. But when you look at the draft, and I do question two running backs, but, you know, they still needed four, so I don't have a problem with it. I got to give Douglas, even though I've been tough on him, if this pans out, their plan was pretty good because basically everybody knows they're in a win-now situation, and yet he kind of sprinkled in some stuff for the future between picks and players that aren't ready to play right away, and that's a tough combination to do. So if this all plays out and they get production out of their first two picks and maybe somebody else down, you know, whoever else they got, I think this possibly could be a successful draft.
Well, I think, Ira, what it says is, A, Joe Douglas is a good guy, and B, he's hoping that if everything goes well this season, that he will be allowed to come back. And so this way, and that will be into consideration, the fact, hey, you know what, he could have been a little selfish, he could have just done for this year to make sure that the team's okay. You know, great job with the linemen. Yes, we needed it. Great job with the wide receiver. Yes, we needed depth there. Obviously, the running back, you never have too many of those, although I think four is a lot. But, yeah, quarterback for the future, you know, safety, Mr. Relevant. We'll see how that goes. If he doesn't really play right now, hey, we got somebody for special teams. And the same thing with the cornerback they took, Stiggers. So, you know, it's twofold for me, Ira, and I think it says to Woody Johnson and Chris Johnson, hey, maybe things didn't work out. Okay, maybe the players that we wanted to get or the guys that I drafted before weren't what we thought they were going to be. But I'm still looking for the long term as well as short term. And that's a very thin line to walk, Ira.
I get it. But, you know, maybe he had no choice at this point. But he's playing both ends of the fence. But, you know, ultimately what this season's going to come down to, besides they have to stay healthy, everybody knows that, the coach has to take the next step. He has to. You know, between him and Hackett, you know, Rodgers is calling the plays, but Hackett's still responsible for the offense. The two of them have to take it to the next level because there's no more excuses. If this team stays relatively healthy, they should have some sort of winning season. I don't know how far they're going to go, but they should be playing maybe into the second round of the playoffs. And if they don't get there and they're healthy, I have to say it's probably because of the coach.
Well, here's what concerns me, Iron. So it was good talking to you. Thanks for the call. Is what concerns me more so than Salah is just how bad the OC was last year. I mean, there was nothing. I don't care who the quarterback was. They just, it was like, everything in this book is for Aaron Rodgers. And if it's not Aaron Rodgers, nobody else can use the book. And I think during this offseason, I would hope that Robert Saleh had a nice little conversation and said, hey, listen, we need to have some plays in this offense that somebody else can run other than Aaron Rodgers. I mean, there were opportunities, and we put a lot on it. We blame a lot of this on Zach Wilson, and he does bear his share of the blame. There's no question about it. But there was a lot of this stuff that the playbook wasn't geared for anybody but Aaron Rodgers. And you can't think like that. At least that's the way it looked. Like, I don't care who the quarterback was. The offense was awful. It just wasn't good. And so now you're looking and you're saying, okay, all right, we got, and you have to make an adjustment to it because, I mean, come on, there is a possibility, and I'm not picking on Aaron Rodgers or the Jets offensive line, but what, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 quarterbacks hurt last season, starters? Yeah, a lot of backups. So people had to make adjustments on what they were doing as far as your offense and your offenses are concerned because of the fact that your starter wasn't there. And yeah, I get that the offense is geared toward the starter. It should be. It should be. But to have nobody else available to seem like they could run the offense, no other options, no other changes, no other special plays for somebody else to take over, it looks weird. It just looks weird. You know, and once again, maybe it was as bad. You know, maybe Zach Wilson was that bad. Okay? Maybe he was. But, I mean, it just looked like Nathaniel Hackett had no clue what to do with anybody else. There's nothing. There was no creativity. There was no imagination. There was nothing. There's nothing. And that can't be, especially after having it last year. So hopefully there's some other things, some other options in here that, you know, some plays that Tyrod Taylor can run, God forbid, in the fact that he has to play because of injury. I mean, you would hope. Jason's in Pennsylvania. What's up, Jace?
Hey, Larry. How's it going? Longtime fan of yours. I'm a diehard Jets fan since 1982. I've followed the draft studiously for 30 years. Mm-hmm. I'm optimistic about the Jets season, but I dislike this draft as much as any I probably have since John Idzik.
Wow.
I don't dislike the players. I don't dislike the players, and if I say this, a lot of Jets fans are going to jump down my throat and say, we, like always, we nailed it. Every Jets fan, every year, we nailed the draft. Mm-hmm. I think Fasciano's a nice player. I'm usually okay with building for the future. Right now, I'm not interested in who's going to be our left tackle in 25. I want to win now. I wanted Bowers. I would trade Fasciano and Corley and that pathetic 2026 sixth-round pick for Bowers right now, or Odunze. I wanted Odunze, too. I don't think Jordan Travis is long for the NFL. I think he's way too small. I like the Braylon Allen pick a lot because that's what we needed. We needed a big bruising back. Mm-hmm. But I wanted offensive weapons all day and of the weekend, twice on Sunday. I just don't think we got the offensive firepower we needed for Rodgers. And that's what really we should be looking at. And that's what – if I'm John – Joe Douglas, that's what I'm doing, because I don't think he makes picks next year if we don't get within a cat's whisker of the Super Bowl. I just don't see it. And I think that there was great value in the fourth round, and then he got so cute and had it to trade out of the fourth round. And for what? I don't really think we needed so many developmental types, so many guys to contribute 2 years from now. And the running backs, it was a little bit redundant to get guys with a similar skill set, and I don't know if Izzy's going to be fighting for his roster spot, but, you know, I liked Allen, but did we need a guy who hasn't played in college and only played one season in the CFL? I don't know. These guys are reaches and projects that the Jets are not a team that can afford that. They are not good enough to be able to take luxury picks. And while I like the players and I'll root for them, I dislike the plan, and that's my stance, and I'm sticking to it.
All right, Jason. Thanks for the phone call and the kind words. Listen, I know that people wanted Bowers at the tight end. I get it. But when you look at the fact that you had what? I can't even remember how many different combinations you had at the offensive line. And you've got two free agent guys who are injury prone. You had to shore up the offensive line. I mean, you saw what happened to Aaron Rodgers on the first play last year. You had to shore up the offensive line. Now, if you're telling me afterwards, okay, we need some other weapons, too many running backs, you know, you kind of agree with Simeone on that. I get it. I do. But you can't compliment. I don't know how you can challenge them on picking another lineman. And you know, because of the fact that their depth was so bad last year. The offensive line cost you a quarterback. The offensive line cost you a chance to get to have a winning season. That's how bad the O-line was. So you shored it up. You did a good job shoring it up in free agency, but you shored it up with guys who are injury prone. I mean, Smith is a Hall of Famer, but Smith, I mean, give me a break. I mean, when is the last time he's played a full season? And the fact that Dallas was able to not bring him back tells you that, you know, they did what they could to keep him on the field last year, and you're probably going to have to do the same thing to keep him on the field this year. And Morgan Moses, I mean, he's coming off an injury, and he's been solid, and you really shouldn't have let him go. You know, he was here. He was here. So, it's. I get what you're saying about more offense, but at this point, the offensive line was a priority. And I think they did the right thing in addressing the offensive line by getting some depth. Because when they had the injuries last year and they went through the depth, it was awful. It was awful. And you got your eyes, fingers, and toes crossed that Elijah Vera Tucker's going to be able to play for the full season this year. You know, I mean, he's your best. Well, a couple of years ago, because he's missed two straight full seasons, but going into that time, he was your best offensive lineman and most versatile to be able to play more than he played two or three different positions. And he was hurt. And that messed up your whole offensive line. So I know about Bowers. I get it. I know the rumors about them moving up. I get it. I understand all that. But ultimately, you still have to protect your quarterback. I don't care who it is. 1-800-919-3776. Also via X. At Hardesty ESPN, at ESPN NY 98_7 FM. Easily, the most anticipated sporting event of the year is coming up. It's the pickleball showdown between Team DiPietro and Rothenberg and Team Anita Marks and Amani Toomer. It takes place on Cinco de Mayo, that Sunday, May 5th, at Pickleball America in Stamford, Connecticut. Now, pregame coverage kicks off right here on ESPN New York at 9 a.m. with a live broadcast hosted by Anita Marks as she sets the stage. Then shortly after the show, the paddles come out for the Pickleball Showdown for the Ages. Be there on May 5th to witness this showcase event at Pickleball America in Stamford, Connecticut. Your calls are next on 98.7 ESPN.
The Larry Hardesty Show on 98.7 ESPN.
The Larry Hardesty Show here on 98.7 ESPN. Mark's in Newark. What's up, Mark?
What's going on, Brother Larry?
Long time, my friend. How you doing? How you doing?
Yeah, good to hear you. I've been good. Yourself?
All right, thank you, sir.
Nah, that's awesome. First of all, what a wonderful win by the Mets today.
Oh, yeah.
Mark Vientos came up to bat, Larry, and I said, when Bader hit that ball over the top to get him over, I said to myself, oh, well, three, here goes this week. Because he hasn't given me any reason to think that he can play at the major league level. Mm-hmm. So, and then his body language was like it always is. And then he does that. So hopefully he'll be able to play.
Yeah.
But I'm happy that the Mets won. It was a great win. And it was good for his confidence, I guess.
Absolutely.
Yeah, no doubt. I like the way Bader's playing too. I like the way the team is playing. And this this other pitcher we got, this kid that came in, this man that came in the eighth. How do you say his last name? He's like got like 0 ERA or something like that.
Yeah, he's good. Right, he's been real good.
Yeah, yeah, he's doing pretty well. The Jets. So here we are again, getting ready for another one. And the Jets are the off-season Super Bowl favorites to me, anyway. But anyway. Where I'm at is real simple. A, I always disagree with Rich. He's like, John Franklin Myers is a lunch pail guy. How are they going to replace him? Come on, man. Come on. Like, Kinlaw is just a 195-pound rookie. Stop. I really did want to replace who's that guy that we lost at the nose tackle? He's like big as an apartment building.
Yeah. I know
what
you're talking about.
Yeah. We kind of needed him. I didn't like that loss, to be honest with you. Yeah. I always liked the Naga type of guy. Mm-hmm. I know you know what I mean by that.
Yes.
So, with the draft and all this stuff, look, everybody wants the shiny new toy. I'm no different, but I wasn't in love with Brock Bowers, and I hear all the Brock Bowers are guys. Oh, we needed more weapons, more weapons. Don't you know we got Aaron Rodgers? Don't you know we just got this bruising young running back? Can't wait to see him play, because then you got the thunder and lightning between him and give him a spell at them third and ones. I could see him getting a few of them. Uh-huh. And we don't need to score 75 points a game. We don't need to be Miami, and because we still give up 17 points a game. Yeah. That didn't change, and I don't expect for it to. So between the fact that we got one of the best kickers in the league, and we got Aaron Rodgers, and we got Hall, and we got Williams, if he's healthy, we keep hearing all these, if they're healthy, what if they are healthy? Mm-hmm. What you going to do then? So any team can say if they're healthy. So I look at it this way. We have plenty of weapons on offense. We got a quarterback that can regulate it, and if he goes down, Tyrod Taylor can regulate it too. Mm-hmm. And bring them on. And then stop us from scoring 21 points. In the meantime, you try to get past 17. And with our defense not being on the field the whole game and you being behind having to pass all the time. How's that going to work out, you think?
It'll be something new, Mark. Thanks for the phone call. I'll tell you that. It'll be something new. That's why I agree with him. You had to go offensive line there. You had to make sure that your quarterback is protected. I don't care who it is back there. Got to protect them. You need depth. Quality depth. Not depth. Quality depth. And it's a young guy who gets to watch and learn and then eventually step in and play. We'll continue the conversation next on 98.7 ESPN. I've said this a lot. And I know there are people here who are like, oh my God, Larry's going to say this again. But it's true. You build your football teams from the line back. And I get the whole idea about offense. I get this is a points league. I get being able to hit your receivers. I get being able to stretch the field. I get all that. I do. I understand what is nice and great and what it means to have another receiver opposite Garrett Wilson so Garrett Wilson can shine. I get it. And that's what the Jets did when they brought in Mike Williams. He's supposed to be that guy. And then you still have your tight ends and you still have some other folks. And maybe, Alan Lazard with Aaron Rodgers back can find a way to be productive as your third receiver. Maybe. But you don't get any of that if you can't protect your quarterback and open some holes for your running back. I mean, Breece Hall did a lot of stuff last year, okay? But, you know, he was great. But there was a lot of plays. You can see he was frustrated. There were no holes. Hopefully that's what the Jets have done is added some depth at the offensive line to do a better job for them offensively and be more productive. We'll talk Don LaGreca, Rangers, Caps next on 98.7 ESPN. Rangers win game 3, go for the sweep tonight in the nation's capital. And Don LaGreca joins us right here on 98.7 ESPN. Hello, Don.
Hi, dear. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm very good. I don't know what happened. I guess Saturday was kind of misting and like 55 degrees. And right now, walking to the arena, it was 85 and gorgeous. And I don't know, we went right from like the beginning of spring to the middle of the summer here in D.C. How was it up there?
Very nice day, mid-60s.
Okay.
A little golf, nice golfing day, Don, although you don't care about that.
No, that's a waste of a day.
But we're supposed to get some rain a little bit later.
Why not?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's not. It is springtime, right? That's what it's about.
That is. April showers bring May flowers, right?
That's what they say. It also brings crabgrass, but that's a whole other story. Don, I think when you look at this series so far, you correct me if I'm wrong, the thing that jumps out at me is really the speed. Washington just looks really slow.
Yeah, they are. I mean, this is not a great team. This is easily the worst playoff team of the 16 that made it. It was a tortoise race to the finish with Pittsburgh and Detroit. The Islanders were able to get that 3 seed in the Metro based on that long winning streak they had at the end of the season to kind of put some distance between themselves and the 8 seeds. But you're right. I mean, Ovechkin is stationary at this point. Oshie's not getting any younger. McElrath has been forced to play because of the injuries on the blue line, and he was always slow. Ranger fans will remember him. Now they get Jensen and Sandin back, so that'll help a little bit with the blue line. But, yeah, it's a plodding team that 5-on-5, they're no match for the Rangers, and really when they get the power play opportunities like they did in Game 2 and score a couple of them, kind of makes the games interesting. And with the 6 power plays that they were presented in Game 3, they were able to kind of hang around and keep some of the real weapons like Panarin off the ice. But when it's 5-on-5, it's a 1-versus-8 matchup, and the Rangers have showed that through the first 3 games.
I mean, when you watch this series, Don, you wonder why have people been wondering how the Rangers are going to do 5-on-5? They look great.
Well, they look great in everything they've done, right? They're outside of the 2 power play goals they gave up in Game 2. They were 6-for-6 on the kill with a shorthanded goal in Game 3. Their power play has been outstanding really all year. Third best power play, third best kill. And I think we kind of nitpick the 5-on-5, Larry, because we look at this team as a cup contender. So, all right, what's wrong with the team? What's going to stop this team from winning a Stanley Cup? Well, you know, Zibanejad and Kreider need to be better 5-on-5, and they were about even all year 5-on-5, but they also create a lot of power play opportunities based on drawing penalties 5-on-5. We don't talk about that. And clearly it's been a non-issue here. But it is going to get a lot tougher. And moving on to the next round, presumably, if it's going to be Carolina and then possibly Florida after that, or even if it's Boston, believe me, the competition will get stiffer. And it may end up being an issue at some point before it's all said and done. But right now, all's good.
How important is it, Don, for Rangers just get this done, right? Eliminate this team. Let's go. Let's move on tonight.
You know, normally I wouldn't give it that much thought, but I think it's really important this year because, again, when you look at Carolina coming up next, and that is as good a team as the Rangers are. They weren't separated by very many points during the year, and it's going to be a real tough matchup. You have home ice, but wouldn't you love to be able to just rest after a long season, 82 games, 4 more in the playoffs, and then have the Islanders maybe steal a game 5 and force a game 6, and they've got to play a few more games. So I think it's really key. If you look at the Rangers' runs in 14 and 15 and even the run they had in 2022, they went long in early series, 7-game series in the first round, 7-game series in the second round. If you've got hopes to win the Stanley Cup, that's going to pile up on you a little bit. So, you know, take care of business, rest some bodies. Not that they have any injuries, Larry, but this time of year, everybody's banged up and sore and, you know, get to work and start preparing for the next round. So, got a chance to do that. If you don't, then you got to, you know, twiddle your thumbs until Wednesday. And even if you clinch then, you missed a couple of days of preparation for the next round. And if the Capitals, if the Hurricanes win on Tuesday, then you have no extra advantage because of rest. So that's why I think today or tonight is going to be big to finish it off.
Rangers Capitals, Dan Grassa has the pregame at the bottom of the hour. Don LaGreca and Dave Maloney with the call just after the top of the hour of 8 o'clock here on 98.7 ESPN. Don, I'm looking at Igor Shesterkin. He's been fabulous. Is it him being great, or is it a combination of him being great plus the defense in front of him has done a nice job where they haven't – his sight lines are not blurred. He's been able to see the puck pretty good in the series.
Yeah, he's been terrific. Listen, Washington isn't going to throw a lot of rubber at you. They were one of the least amount of shots during the course of the regular season. But still, outside of that tough goal he gave up against Carlson early in Game 3 – boy, did he respond. You played the highlight of the Pacioretty save, point blank. Wenberg had a giveaway, LaPierre right in front by himself, save. Late in the game, Wilson was right at the doorstep, made the save. He has been in a really nice groove for this team. So, yeah, listen, they're tight defensively. They don't give up a lot, But their goaltender has been tremendous. He has put that bad January behind him. He's been terrific. And you don't even talk about him much because you kind of know what he's going to be. But, you know, when you consider you're not giving up a ton and knowing that you've got that insurance policy behind you, makes you feel pretty good. This guy was one of the best goaltenders in the league 2 years ago, won the Vezina Trophy, and he feels like he's on top of his game here just when the Rangers need him to be.
Yeah, he's been outstanding. There's no question about that. Don, why am I opening up my newspaper today and watching and reading Larry Brooks talking about the NHL villain in Rempe? He's just a guy that he's always in the news, Don.
Hey, well, because he's a cult hero, and he gets himself in a little bit of trouble, and it's not all his fault. We talk about it a lot, Dave and I, during the games and with Kenny and just bantering back and forth during morning skates. He's so much bigger than everybody else. And I'm a solid 6 feet tall, okay? And I went to practice yesterday, and standing next to him on skates, he's a full foot taller than I am on skates. And so when he hits somebody, and most of the time when somebody's going to get hit, they're playing the puck. They're a little hunched over. And so you're almost saying you're not allowed to hit anybody because if you hit somebody at some point, you know, the head may make contact. Was it an interference call the other night? He got called for it. League looked at it. No supplementary discipline. We talked to him on Saturday. He says he's doing all the things right. He watches film just like you would a goal scorer, just like you would a goaltender, to learn how he could be better at hitting. And he's done it. And what frustrates people is that he's not a goon. He can play. I mean, he's got ability. And he's not going to play a ton of minutes, but the minutes he's going to play with that fourth line with Gaudreau and VC are going to be effective and needed. So that kind of frustrates you even more. So he's become a story because he's a cult hero in New York. So that becomes the anti-hero everywhere else. But he's such a good kid, and he brings a lot more to the table than I think what he's being given credit for. But what he's being given credit for has been a really cool thing to see, and it can really change the momentum of a series as long as he doesn't get in trouble like he did in New Jersey back in February, because you don't need that. But so far in this series, at least, it hasn't been a problem, despite the fact that he's committed a penalty in all three games. Got to clean that up a little bit, but everything else has been great.
You know, what's fascinating to me, Don, is when you look at the NBA playoff time, you know, coaches normally shorten their bench, right? You make up to nine, goes to seven or eight deep. You look at the NHL, you mentioned the fourth line. You keep rolling out your lines as if it's the regular season. How important has that fourth line been for the Rangers?
Oh, it's been tremendous because you've got a two-time Stanley Cup champion, Barkley Goodrow, there. Jimmy Vesey has been around this league in a while, and he's been a guy that actually played right wing on the top line at times during the course of this season. And, of course, what Rempe can bring. And then you look at that third line, they've done pretty much everything but score. Cooley and Wenberg have been terrific. And Kaapo Kakko, I think, is about ready to pop as far as maybe having some offense here. And you know what the top two lines can do, especially that Trocheck line. So that's when you know you're at your best, that it doesn't matter who's on the ice. You feel really good that you're going to be able to play the system, that you're going to be able to produce, and it keeps guys fresh. You look at, like, you know, Carolina's been chasing deficits, and their top guys are playing a ton of minutes because they've got a double shift guys, and they don't trust their bottom six because they can't produce. Rangers don't have that problem, and that's really going to help them down the stretch, because when you can roll four lines and have them be productive, that is going to be just it's going to be a godsend for this team, because the best teams are the deepest teams, and they've got plenty.
I know you're going to ask Dave Maloney for his keys to the game, but that's after eight. I want to know your keys to the game right now.
Well, even though the kill's been good, that's the only way the Capitals, I think, can win this game is if you get penalty trouble. And that's just, you don't want to do it. Six penalties, now worth some ticky-tack calls made. They've kind of been in this series. So keep that in mind. Be disciplined. Laviolette talked about it this morning. You know, stay out of the box. Don't give them anything. I think that's going to be, you know, a tremendous key. And probably the biggest key, because I'm looking 5-on-5, and they're just the better team, Larry. They're just the better team, and the only way to allow an inferior team back in is if you give them advantages, and that's just something you just can't allow to do. So to me, that's going to be, you know, the biggest key of the game. Try to keep this 5-on-5. Take advantage of your power play opportunities, which you should be able to do. And if you stay disciplined and keep it to just a handful of, you know, one or two penalties, you should be in great shape to get some time off before the second round.
Don, you and Dave have a great call. I expect to hear a lot of screaming and yelling from you from goals down in the nation's capital, and we'll talk to you soon, my friend. We'll be listening to you on the K-Show as well. Thanks for a couple
minutes. It's always a pleasure, man. Thanks. Anytime.
Appreciate you. All right, that's Don LaGreca. Once again, our coverage, Rangers, Caps start at the bottom of the hour. Dan Grosser will get you started, and then Don and Dave just after 8 o'clock here on 98.7 ESPN. We'll come back. We got some closing thoughts on the Knicks winning and what other things are going on, like the Mets and Yankees. We'll do that next on 98.7 ESPN.